Hello, and welcome to the Covenant of Mayors podcast. I'm Anthony Coakley. One hazard of climate change that is common to huge numbers of cities across the world is the twofold blight of flooding and drought. Today, I'm speaking with two experts from the Covenant of Mayors Policy Support Facility who worked with the Spanish municipality of Cox to develop a solution which lets each of these problems, too much and too little water, solve each other. My guests are Effie Hendricks.
I'm an assistant professor of disaster resilience and humanitarian assistance at the University of Twente in the Netherlands. And I work primarily to scale up recovery assistance by understanding the impact of climate change adaptation measures. And I work on a lot of behavioral models to understand, what really makes that people act in a certain way. And that is, of course, relevant in post-disaster reconstruction, but also in climate change adaptation. I work in different countries in Europe, but also in the Global South on these topics.
And Juan Capaneas Amenedo.
I am Juan. I am an urban economist. I like to mention my position as urban economist because I have a bachelor in economics, and also I did a master's in urban planning. Well, nowadays I am an orchestrator at Climate Kick in the mission for climate neutral cities. I mainly working with the cities, European cities, in tackling or supporting them on bridging the gap on climate change implementation measures and try to unlock funding to implement them.
Cities all over the world are seeing the impacts of climate change, I think, mounting at the moment, sort of catching us, I mean, not by surprise, it was expected, but really making themselves felt, we'll say. So can you tell me a little bit about the climate hazards that Cox faces more broadly, and then which one did you guys choose to work on, and what was the process of picking that out as key from this context of climate impacts?
Yes, sure. Well, so we are looking at a Cox, and Cox is a very small city of just 7,000 inhabitants in Spain, near to Alicante. So just to have an idea of where we are located. And there's a lot of typical problems here in this municipality of Cox that you also find in other places in Spain. So it is water shortage in summer and extreme rainfall and severe floods in winter. So the main question is really, how can we close the water cycle of the city? And the municipality is located at the bottom of a mountain range. And it's also surrounded by a lot of agriculture areas. So that's really dedicated to fruit and vegetables. So that really gives an idea of the type of community we're in. So in the hot summers, of course, there is a shortage of grey water to irrigate the parks and to have enough for the agriculture as well. So they use drinking water for that. And also during the year, there is also a phenomenon called Danas. So that's something typical in that area of Spain, where you have very extreme winds and rainfall for approximately 2 to 4 days. And this causes a lot of floods in the area, and it's quite extreme floods. So this combination of extreme drought and rainfall, that combination is something that we focused on in this support facility that we did. And yeah, just the municipality of Cox really wants to know what is coming and how can they prepare for this in a better way.
I suppose no matter where you are, you have a degree of this cyclicality of the weather. Is it something that you've seen really exacerbated in recent years, or it's just that now was a good moment to approach it?
Well, recent years were definitely very, very difficult for the city. I remember in 2018, I think it was, they have a very extreme severe rainfall. Dana, as if you mentioned, and well, city was almost destroyed, and many damages impacted the city. So they are every year having more and more impacts in terms of economic impacts and also personal and physical damages for the city. So yeah, they are having these extreme rainfalls more and more continuously.
Yeah, and maybe to add to that, I think it's also quite widely known in Spain that climate change is really a thing and it's really happening. So you see it all over the news all the time. Extreme weather is really part of the daily news. So it's the awareness is quite strong that there is a lot of drought all over Spain. There are extreme periods of extreme heat all over Spain. So yeah, the awareness that this is a growing problem, I think it's quite present in this area.
Yeah, and to build on that, this area particularly is very focused on agriculture. So the main economic sector, the main source of richness of funding of of business for the people there is agricultural. So these droughts, these extreme rainfalls are damaging the economy of the people, and well, they are raising awareness of the problem that climate change is posing for the area, for the region, and for the economy of the province.
You mentioned the economic cost and also the human cost of the damage. As someone who's there in the city, can you maybe paint a bit of a picture? I mean, what does that really look like?
Well, we have primarily seen a lot of images and videos of the extreme floods. So these floods, they are 2 to 4 days with extreme rainfall. So the floods are also very intense and all at once and very extreme. So it's quite sudden, and you see quite high water levels, I think approximately 1 to 2 meters across the whole city. Well, there are some parts, of course, that are more flooded than others, but across the whole city center, you see these floods. So that is, of course, really made an impact on the community. And people, of course, had damage to their houses, to their cars, to their gardens. I'm not sure if there were fatalities, but it definitely has made a big impact on everyone.
And so, faced with all of this, some might say faced with the impossible, what approach did you try to take locally to make a difference here?
We primarily started with helping the municipality of Cox identify, okay, where the priorities lie. So they have had already developed different plans of analysis to understand the municipal situation, but also the regional situation, and to really identify what is essential and where their funding and efforts needed to go. That is what we prioritized in the beginning. So we had some online exercises before we went there to really understand, okay, what is the priority and what are the main risks they are facing. And so during those exercises, we decided to really focus the project on the main source of the floods. So the steep mountain area next to the municipality, that was the real source that really went, that was the water that went into the community during the times of extreme rainfall. So you can imagine this causes an overload of the sewage system. So there were ways needed to redirect the water, to capture the water in different places so that it would slow down the way towards the sea, but also to capture the water. So if you have a lot of water in the winter, you want to save it for the summer. So it was not only about making sure that the water infiltrates, but also to capture it. So we suggested a series of water basins in the mountainous area that was could be very valuable for refreshment and recreation in the summer, but also could help in times of water scarcity for agriculture. And also we also included a plan for reforestation in that area, so it's also to help that the mountain would capture more of the water in times of extreme rainfall.
I think this is something really interesting for probably many listeners and many cities to focus in on a bit, and they're wondering, where do we begin? How do we know where to begin? So maybe you could just take a couple of minutes to open up that process a bit. I mean, how did you, looking at everything that was going on, reach the decision that this was the measure you'd start? I mean, was it a cost-benefit analysis, or was it just more of a post-it exercise? Or how does it work to identify this as, okay, here's where we start, and then build momentum from there?
Well, actually, it was an exercise of asking questions. So we indeed created like an online poster exercise that was, of course, for us, for Juan and me, very common to do, but quite new.
Yeah,
also.
I think it was by mirror, if I remember. Yeah, and it was like a brainstorming, and we tried to figure out what were the priorities for the technical officers, for the financial officers of the city, and it was not, I mean, a big deal. It was only a brainstorming, a try to prioritize the main ideas, the focus of the city. And we discovered primarily and very, very soon that we should focus on opportunity space that will be the former quarry of the municipality. This open pit site where ideal for looking for new solutions for the municipality.
Yeah, and actually there, it was more like they had a collection of smaller ideas, so smaller plants already developed, identified in their earlier analysis. But what we did in this exercise is also really thinking a little bit bigger, actually, and seeing the connection between those projects and how they could help each other. So, of course, reforestation, but then where and how? And if you want to capture water, then where and how is this? So really to understand the whole water system. So that is what we... Yes, so it was really a conversation and questioning and asking and really having, it was really like a brainstorm.
So no fireworks, but at the same time, something that the municipality hadn't maybe launched in before. What I'm getting a picture of is a Socratic method of some kind to problem solving or to problem definition. Would that be a good way to characterize it?
Yeah. Well, this could be a good definition, a Socratic way of approaching the main problem the municipality had. And to add on that, I think that a different standpoint for the municipality was that people from different institutions were telling them many things that they already knew, but listening from an external point of view for them kind of legitimate these ideas they were creating or having before, but they were not willing to share or to go ahead with them. So I think that this external support was encouraging for them.
I've heard that from a lot of cities, that just having this focus, especially with an international project like the Covenant of Mayors, kind of creates a catalyst to do what maybe, you know, sometimes is evident or sometimes not, but to push the topic both internally and with other stakeholders. So you mentioned other voices, other stakeholders. I'd love to know about the other groups. I mean, cities have a lot that they need to do, but obviously they work well engaging other parties and acting as facilitator and catalyst as well. So can you tell me a little bit about everyone that was involved in this project, both in its definition and in carrying it out?
We start the first site visit with three specific workshops. We organize first one, a technical workshop with different technical experts that were working previously with the municipality, engineers, economists, different officers from the provincial government, also the regional government. So we hold a very integral workshop on technical issues, trying to focus and to look for the main solutions for the municipality in order to adapt to the climate change. The second one was a more leisure workshop. We invite a very active social organization, mainly on the sport field, based on the municipality, but not only in the municipality. We invite also different groups from the surroundings of Cox, and well, it was very interesting that they were very involved on looking for new solutions for the mountain range, for the area, and they were very happy to be listened as part of the solution. And the third one was a workshop with a businessman from the city. We have more or less 40 attendees, mainly from the agricultural sector, but not only. And this was also very interesting to get them on board and to try to find out new bright solutions for the city.
Let's not forget the kids and the students. So we also involved the local high school, which was very nice, and the teachers. So they were very engaged. Of course, you can understand, like the biology teachers, they're very also engaged in on helping translate climate change to the students. So we had a very interesting workshop hosted by a local educational platform. It's called MUDIC. They had a very fantastic awareness raising workshop with the students, explaining them about climate change. And we involved them also in the plantation of trees in the area. So we had a large group of students, and also we involved a local employment development program. So this is an opportunity for people to find new careers in the municipality. So they were also involved in a replantation program. So that was, very engaging as well. So I think what is very interesting here is that you really need a wide range of stakeholders to really tackle this problem, because it's quite complex. And water is related to so many, many sectors, and you really need this integral thinking. So we really needed all those different layers to be involved. And it's not just that we needed it, but they were also very motivated to be part of this. And they really got a feeling that they really can do this. You know, they really felt the bigger picture. They understood the bigger picture. And I think that everybody was super happy to be engaged and interested to work with the municipality, and they felt indeed really hurt.
Yeah, and it should be highlighted at this point that the amazing work the COX officers were doing on gathering all these groups. The first time we went there, we were surprised by the reception, by the number of stakeholders involved. It was brilliant. It was amazing. Yeah.
You weren't terrified by seeing all these people that you have to deal
no.
with?
Yeah. In fact, we did.
We were actually really surprised, you know, like in preparation meetings, we, of course, gave a lot of ideas. We could do this, we could do that. Maybe we should also involve people from the recreational departments. So, but everything we suggested, they actually followed up on. And that is, I think, it's quite amazing, because you don't always see that, of course. Sometimes there are a lot of barriers and you cannot really act from and actually arrange it all. And it was quite short notice as well, but they really managed to pull it all together in a very professional way. So that was really amazing indeed.
When it comes to the measure that you guys proposed, so using this mine, because you mentioned sort of identifying the approach quite early on in the process, was the engagement then more about seeing how people could collaborate in bringing this to fruition and maybe helping them understand what was going on? Or was there also at this consultation involvement phase development of the idea itself, maybe some new directions or new important information gathered as part of this outreach exercise?
Well, actually, for example, from a technical point of view, there is a lot of knowledge in the community already there. We as outsiders don't have all those technical insights that they already have. So there was one guy and he knew everything about all the sewage systems in the whole city. He knew where they were and how they were connected, and it was not mapped at all. So having him there is very important if you want to map the water system of the city. Then there was a water company there that, of course, has a lot of knowledge on the local water capacity, the water needs. So all those, you know, like if you want to understand what is needed, they have to talk to each other. So also what we organize is really a space where people could share those ideas and different solutions. So we just went from the bigger picture really down to the more technical details, and it really became, for example, a technical working group in that sense.
Had this sewage guy, had he helped to lay the pipes, or was this just an enthusiasm of his, or?
I think both. He was definitely an enthusiast, but he had also been involved in developing all the canals in the city, right, Sagwan?
Yeah, indeed, yeah. And well, we have also a guided tour by the quarry. I mean, they knew all the details of the quarry, so they have the knowledge. You only have to connect the dots. And these workshops we organized were very, very positive in this particular sense. They were surprised by the work the other people were doing, and it was very, very fruitful.
Yes. So indeed, this guy that's from the mountain, he knew exactly where the water could be stored. So he already had thought about it and he has studied it. So if you just look at plans, it's not going to help you. But if you are actually there and you see the different places, and he showed us, I think it should be here because. So he has a really good understanding of the mountain. Yeah. So that, I think, is also vital to bring that together and to just connect.
Like so many of our episodes this season, what I love about this example from Cox is its great specificity and its wide applicability. Not only is the practice itself ripe to be replicated elsewhere, but so are the design techniques employed for putting it in place. In part one, we heard about the situation in Cox, the techniques our experts used for problem definition, and the extraordinary value that all the groups and individuals in the city were able to bring to the project. In part two, we'll discover exactly how the solution that resulted from this process works, and how adaptation to climate change can combine with community building and placemaking. We'll also learn more about the challenges that arose from project-stopping administrative issues to the difficulties in public-private cooperation, and our experts will hammer home just how effective a positive and collaborative attitude can be in making the impossible possible. Join me now for part two.
So if I understand correctly, basically near this incline, this slope by the village in the mountain, there's also an empty quarry that's available. So it's a matter of redirecting some of the tributaries and streams in the mountain into this quarry. It then fills up, and then you have some sort of pipe with a valve that you can open in the summer. Is that basically it? And is there anything more we should understand about how it works?
Well, yeah, I will say yes, but not only, because they feel also very linked to this quarry, and they have like a sense of ownership of the quarry. So they want it back for the future of the inhabitants, of the people of the municipality. So they have a mixed sense of ownership. So it is a technical solution, but not only a technical solution. They want also to have a park, a reforestation there, to have a good place to spend time. So yeah, I will say that. Yeah, that I don't know if you.
Yes, indeed. It says multi layers. It's not only capturing the water, but also using the mountain in a better way that it actually has, a use for the municipality during the whole year for recreation, for sports. So yeah, I think that is definitely something that we added. It should not only just be a technical plan, because, you know, like what are we really building? So it's also about giving access to green space.
Are people swimming here as well?
Not yet, no. So we started with the implementation, but it's not yet. So of course we would have loved to finish this all in 1 year, but maybe you can imagine this is a start of a longer process. So we've not been able to do this all in 1 year. So the water is not captured yet. So at the moment it has not been solved yet, because we ran into some really big bottlenecks.
So you'll be invited back at some point with your swimming clothes and towels to.
Yeah,
I'm sure. If they open it, so. I'm sure.
So that's a really clear picture of the idea, the philosophy and the practical implementation. But indeed, you mentioned bottlenecks, and it's one thing to have a really good idea, but it's another thing to put it into practice. So can you tell me a bit about the challenges that you faced then once this was taking shape?
Okay, one of the main challenges and barriers we found and we discovered it on the course of the support to the municipality was legislative or administrative bottleneck. This quarry was formerly by a mining company, and well, the municipality was buying this quarry to the mining company. In order to implement some of the solutions we were talking about, these urban drainage systems, this reforestation, these different solutions, they have to get permission from the regional government. But to do so, they need funding, and funding is blocked because there is a claim from the regional government to the former mining company to receive a guarantee from this company that is obliged by law to give, but because they are insolvent, they were on bankruptcy some years ago, they are not willing or they they don't have funds to pay back. So this is a huge bottleneck. So they have to receive this permission and also the funding from the regional government in order to implement the solution, mainly to protect the site, because it's not still protected. The walls of the open pit are not solid, or they don't have protection. So in order to implement the solutions, firstly, there is a huge effort and huge work to be done with the regional government to accelerate in some way this legislative or as administrative bottleneck.
So just to understand, there was some sort of, it was a question that the mining company should have provided before some sort of structural information about the safety of the space, but they hadn't done so, and therefore you have to take extra measures.
I think that by contract they have to pay back a guarantee to secure the walls of the quarry. And they didn't. And so the Generalitat Valenciana, the regional government, is claiming then to pay back this guarantee, and they don't. This is a main problem to start working with the solutions we thought.
Yeah, so just only a small part of the area was unstable, but because of that, the whole area was closed off. So
yeah.
Therefore, also, we couldn't take steps in developing the recreational plans. So the recreational plans that we got in the workshops were really detailed. We have developed them really into detail, and people were ready to act, like, when can we start, you know? But this was really a problem. We had to make sure that this area could be opened so that things could be developed. So what we did was we went there. So we went with the whole team. We went to Valencia to have a conversation with the people responsible for this, for opening the mine, making sure that the stability was assured. And they actually had been there like almost, I think, 2 years before the project. They were there to check on the state of the walls, and they had done a whole assessment of what needed to be done. And they actually figured out they actually needed more money than there was available. So they said, okay, yeah, we actually need more money to restore the safety of the walls. And also, if they would restore it, we also wanted to implement those plans so that it's not only a safe plan, but also a valuable plan for the municipality, so that it's actually really a win-win, so that they would restore it in such a way that it could actually also help to capture the water.
Clear. And so what was the way of approaching this, given the obvious issue?
Well, luckily, we had a very nice and good conversation with them, and they all really understood the problem, because this is not the only municipality dealing with these kind of problems. There are actually quite a lot of municipalities all around Spain that are near to former mining areas that have actually really the same issues. So they really understood the problem very well, and they were also very willing to collaborate, and for example, to collaborate in funding calls. So that was actually very eye-opening for the municipality of Cox. And they also connected them to other municipalities that had the same problems and that were successful in funding applications. So it was really a door opening to develop more structural plans and larger scale plans. So yeah, it was very positive in that sense. The mayor also joined us all the way to Valencia. So it was, yeah, we brought in all the power that we could. We thought, okay, this is very important. We have to open the mining area. So yeah.
So in a way, fighting climate change was also a catalyst to reopen an issue, a relationship, say, that had gone bad, completely separate to the issue of climate. Bring people back to the table.
Yeah, for sure. And in addition to that, and coming back to the bottlenecks, one of the barriers we found it was the political, well, links, and at the time we had these municipal elections in Spain, so many of the timing required to go with these conversations, multi-level conversations, was difficult, because they were not sure if they were to going re-elected. Also, the regional government was changing, so it was a challenge for the municipality team. But we considered that the program, the policy support facility, was an enabler thing to reopen, as you said, this kind of conversations and to encourage them to push. On looking for new solutions.
Yeah, and we were also lucky in that sense that the mayor of the government was re-elected, so that gave continuity to our project, and it was also the same party that was re-elected in the provincial level. Actually, therefore, it opened. It gave maybe also a little bit more power to our claim. And yeah, and I think it's also an issue that everybody understands. It's about risks. It's about opening a mining area. It's about water shortage. So it is also very, very easy to understand. Even if you're left or right wing, it's important for everybody.
Those are two pretty big bottlenecks, and also amazing to manage to transverse those, because they're both, you know, potential project enders, and you're still going.
An additional challenge is funding. They recognize that they acknowledge, I mean, by then I'm referring to the municipal team, that they have lack of resources to apply to many European funding programs. And well, our support was a seed for applying to these new funding programs, but they acknowledge that they are far from getting the funds they need.
Well, there's two facets there, right? One is that cities have an issue just getting the capacity to apply to projects that are available. And the other is maybe that compared to mitigation measures, I know that funding is quite limited for adaptation, even though there are real threats facing cities at the moment in this regard.
Yes, and also to apply for bigger funds, you need a quite detailed plan, a quite detailed technical plan, but also calculating the cost of all the different measures. So you need to have to have quite a detailed understanding and proposal. So given that the capacity was so small, and we understood that problem, both from the technical point of view, from the funding team, we also collaborated with students in the Netherlands that helped to develop all the technical details, even after the project was already done, to take next steps. So they also followed up, and they started with calculations and prioritizing and helping making those plans. So I think we are close to an application, but there's still quite a lot of time needed, of course, to really write such a funding proposal. And that is now up to them at the moment. Of course, we are supporting them via WhatsApp and wherever we can. But yeah, it's still a big challenge for the team.
Yeah, of course. So the nature of being an expert and moving from project to project, I think, is that you create a lot of value with the knowledge and the experience you have from other projects. Can you tell me if there were any former projects that you'd worked on with municipalities that had given you insights that you were able to leverage here, and further, if your eyes have been even more widely opened by this project, and there's advice from it that you would share in further adaptation work to other municipalities?
Well, regarding this knowledge we transfer to the Cox municipality from other European or international programs, I will say that definitely they help a lot. For example, in order to establish awareness tool to structure this participation, we carried out with these workshops with the people from Cox, we build the idea of creating a living lab, kind of governance tool that is supporting or structuring their participation. So this is coming from different, well, experiences and in different projects throughout Europe and the European cities. And I think that these kind of solutions, these kind of ideas are also, well, supporting them on creating new approaches and trying to push the solutions they have.
So what really opened my mind and my eyes here in Cox, I think, was the attitude of the people we worked with. So I think it all depends on the people that you work with and the team you have to your availability, but also the way the team is structured and the municipality was structured. So I think just their attitude was really crucial to it really being a success. It was really a pleasure working with them, but they had such a big willingness also to learn. And I think, you know, that was any suggestion we gave, they followed up, they really thought about it. Although we sometimes ask questions that they might think like, okay, how to even get started here? But they really found their way. And I think that was so rewarding as an expert also, to if you give insights or you give ideas, that they really go for it. So I think that mentality, that we can do it mentality, and, you know, bringing people together, I think that is different in a, maybe a big municipality where you have a lot of more layers, less authority to act maybe. So I think that is special about Cox, just that they, although they are very small, they can do a lot. So I think that is, for me, very inspiring.
You mentioned that there are lots of cities around Spain in particular that not only have the same issue, but may well have the same potential for a similar solution. Can you tell me what advice you would give to a city that says, wait a second, listening, I have a mine and a flood and a drought. Could I?
Yes, I think there are actually indeed quite a few. And also, of course, we through our network, we also try to connect Cox to other of these municipalities. And some of the issues are different. So, for example, in León, there's a similar mining area, but they have a lot of problems with the type of the contamination of the water coming out of the mines. So there, it's not always replicable in areas, because they all the mining areas, of course, they have been mining areas, so the contamination might also be very difficult for the way the water can be treated or cannot be treated, and how it's affecting the city in different ways, also affecting health. But yes, I would suggest to all these communities, all those municipalities, to collaborate and find each other. And actually the mining company, they have them all mapped out. They know where they are. They know where the problems are. So maybe just send an email and reach out to the Generalitat and find out who are other parties that you could collaborate with. Because there are actually quite a lot of answers at a provincial level that are maybe difficult to access, but if you just reach out, it might help things get started.
I agree with that. In fact, I should highlight that from other experience I had in the course of this program, the Policy Support Facility, the main solution for the problems of the municipalities was the term collaboration, and this multi-level, multi-stakeholder collaboration was the enabler for many of the solutions found in these municipalities.
Yeah, maybe one more thing to add, Anthony. I was thinking about also the collaboration with the university. So we were asking a lot of questions. Okay, which trees are you going to plant and why? And have you studied it? Are you sure this is the best one for climate change? And they didn't really have the answer yet. So we connected them to the University of Alicante and university parties in the Netherlands as well to really find out those questions. And actually now they have also found $1 million funding to continue with this project in collaboration with the university. So also the collaboration with the university in the Netherlands. I mean, even if you don't have funding, there's a lot of universities that really care for those issues and are super happy if they can collaborate with a municipality and get things done on the ground. So it is also about seeing that your problem is actually valuable for others to work on.
Great to see the scale. Once you activate the actors locally, the potential to activate further networks internationally on all of those different levels, I guess, is something that's really valuable. But I wonder for each of you, if there is a memory you have about your time working on this project that sticks out.
I will say that many of the moments we had with the municipal team, with the officers from the municipality, were very satisfying and rewarding in the sense that they were very open to receive our feedback. And I think that at the end of the project, we found ourselves working as a kind of a team, and every one of the people involved was taking a role. So we worked so hard and so deep in the problem and with the officers, that at the end of the project we establish personal links, and I think that it was very rewarding from a professional point of view, but not only in addition from a personal point of view. So yeah, I will say that.
Yeah, definitely very rewarding personally working with Lorena Isidro and also the mayor and the other people that we met there. It was really, really, really rewarding. And I think maybe also our trips have been characterized by very good food. Of course, I come from the Netherlands, but it was very amazing everything that we've tasted there in the area. And it was, for example, Lorena, she came with oranges from her own backyard to bring us in the morning so that we could have a fresh orange juice in the morning. So we have received so much hospitality and warmth also in the collaboration. It was not just work, it was really a lot of warm collaborations with them. So I think that was really amazing. Even the day before we started the project, we were arrived to have dinner with the mayor, so you don't really know what to expect the day before. So okay, we are invited for dinner at the mayor, and then the only restaurant that was open was next to a gas station. So we're like, okay, let's go to this gas station. But it was really amazing, and a very open attitude as well of the mayor. But you don't know what to expect, you know, like on a Monday evening somewhere in the middle of nowhere, you go to a gas station to speak with a mayor. So it is very funny, but we have laughed a lot about it, and it was really rewarding in that sense.
Juan, and thank you so much for joining me today. It was really, really great to get all those insights. It's been a great chat. So thank you so much, and I hope that we'll have a chance to meet again.
Yeah, it was great. Thank you very much, Anthony.
Yeah, I really enjoyed. Thanks, Anthony.
Thanks a lot, and have a great day.
You too. Bye.
You too. Bye.
Thanks for joining me in another episode of the Covenant of Mayors podcast. The next episode will be our last one of this season. We'll be talking to some of the people that helped run the Covenant of Mayors Policy Support Facility and hear their big takeaways from all the work the Covenant has been doing to strengthen adaptation to climate change in cities. Remember, you can find the transcript of this episode and other episodes at the Covenant of Mayors website, eu-mayors.ec.europa.eu. Talk to you next time.